If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Scumbags, this is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne,
and it's me, Ellie Gibson.
Ellie, I'm so excited.
Why?
Because one of my most favourite people in the whole world is sitting between us. It is, of course, the wonderful, the very talented, internationally renowned, best-selling author, Helen Russell.
Thank you for having me. It's so lovely to be here.
Absolutely delightful to have you back, because we had you on years and years ago.
Yes.
When you only had like a scattering of books.
Yes.
And now you've got a whole shelf on the library of your international...
What are you talking about?
I don't
about?
Know. What? Where are you going with this? She's written a lot of books, that's what I'm saying.
A whole shelf in the library. No, I'm enjoying... I'm picturing the scene. Carry on.
It would be a very sort of bougie, quite bespoke library. And then maybe I've written six books now, so maybe it would be a modest shelf on a library, yeah.
Well, I have read all of them and they are all brilliant. But today we're going to... focus. We're going to deep dive into your latest, let's say, potentially smash hit book, How to Raise a Viking.
Thank you, yes.
Is that the correct title?
That's right, yes.
Unbelievably excellent. And I am actually quoted on the back, which thank you very much for that.
Thank you so much.
I'm doubly endorsing it. But no, it's wonderful. So you wrote A Year of Living Danishly when you were sort of fresh.
Yes. Yeah,
so you're implying that you're now have gone off a bit.
Yeah.
Like old milk.
Old milk. I've curdled and now I'm kefir.
Yeah.
Fine, I'm very old.
Oh, lovely.
Yes. She's a pickled herring.
Yeah, so a long time ago now, I was living and working in London, and then my husband was offered his dream job working for Lego in Denmark. And at the time, Denmark had been voted the happiest country in the world. So as like a curious journalist, I thought, well, maybe we'll give it a year. We'll give it a try. So we moved there for a year and I wrote The Year of Living Danishly. And then, spoiler alert, I never quite left. And I went from being a carefree, child-free woman to having three children in the space of 3 years, and the chaos ensued. So yes, How to Raise a Viking was born out of the idea of how do they make these happy Nordic people from the ground up? Mm. And how come all of these Viking children grow up to be happy and healthy? And how can I steal that, basically?
So is Denmark still the happiest place on
Earth?
Well, here we go. She's got a notebook out. She's got stats.
I did Woman's Hour and they were very specific on these things. It's actually Finland right now. Denmark are number two. But all the Nordic countries are sort of hovering around the top spots. And they're always sort of taking the top spot from the other one and then gets back up there. So
it's like Eurovision.
It's like Eurovision, yeah. So it's always up there. And the other Nordic countries are up there as well. So I'm looking... this time I wanted to look beyond Denmark at also like Finland, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, because they have lots of things in common and I wanted to find out what these things were.
I'm going to hazard a guess. Is one of them like a really good welfare state and like they actually pay people to have babies and go to university and that sort of thing?
Damn it. Yes, you're right.
Unbelievable.
Hallelujah.
Unbelievable.
Yes. Isn't this money?
Like Darren Brown is in the room. I think I'm coming into my psychic powers at last. It's just unbelievable, isn't it?
But this is the thing. I think many of us in this country think about the Nordics as this magical fairy tale place where they just do nice things just because they're kind.
Yeah.
But it's not altruism. It makes sense. Like we see childcare pays for itself. They valued the impact of working women on the Norwegian economy as the same as the oil reserves, like £626 billion. So they're not doing it to be nice. They're doing it because it works.
So it's Norwegian stupid. Birds are basically just walking oil rigs. That's what we're saying. That's basically what they are in terms of their economic value. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
So women are valued.
Yeah, what an idea.
Mind-blowing. What are you talking about? Get out. And like, this is Britain.
Dads get to parent. How nice is that?
Love what?
What's that?
I loved all of your book, but what I loved when I was reading it was about how midwives and midwifery is like a hallowed profession, and it's really hard to get into, and it's sort of and overly, you know, respected and
It's really hard. It's the hardest grades to get into. So I mean, the same was with everyone in the public sector. There are struggles and there are challenges, and everyone would like a bit more money. But yeah, it's the hardest grades. It's the toughest grades to get into. And yeah, midwives are amazing. I mean, obviously they're amazing, and they're just. It's accepted that they have worked incredibly hard to get where they are, and that you better be nice to them.
And I loved it in the book when you had your first baby. And so you know obviously it was the first birth, so it's a lot of things going on. But your husband got to stay in with you.
Yes.
And then he was handed like a booklet about how to look after you, which is brilliant. So what was in the booklet? What did it say?
The booklet it's sort of the partner's role in a partner who's had the baby is being hospitalised, and it's things like fetching things for the mother. So that can be anything from nappies to new clothes. You don't have to take anything with you. There is no baby bag really, because you can take a toothbrush, but that's it. Everything else is provided. And these corridors in the maternity wards have all the baby's clothes in all the sizes, all the adult clothes in all the sizes. They have something called fishnet panties. We were thinking we'd lost something in translation. Turned out they were the disposable underwear and nothing kind of Anne Summers.
Oh, that's just what you feel like. I'm just giving birth. Like,
you say there's nothing Anne Summers in. Don't yuck someone's yum, we always say.
Always.
There's a lid for every pot.
Oh, exactly. Well, you get your own beds in the, you know, the dad gets a bed as well. So it was, we felt very lucky to be doing it there. And it's still, and also the midwives are amazing. It took so long, the first birth, that my midwife had time to crochet a hat in the 18 hours of active labour. So it's very, this hoogly environment, and you get this new parent breakfast tray with a Danish flag on it and toast and juice and all the things.
It does sound honestly like a socialist utopia, which is my lifelong dream. No, it sounds amazing. We've also got, so I do Twitch twice a week, right? I play games and this, and we've got a lovely woman who comes on quite a lot called Maria, who lives in Denmark, and we all just ask her about Denmark all the time. And then we'll be like, Maria, today I saw on Instagram that you have trampolines in the pavements in the streets. Is that true? And she'll be like, yeah.
I mean, not all the pavements, just bouncing along.
What next? A roller coaster to get to work? I mean, unbelievable.
I would say the weather's terrible. Just before anyone gets sort of super jealous. I mean, it's really bad. It's really bad.
Something's going to give.
Something's got to give.
This is not Australia, thing, Helen. Mm. This is Britain. You are British.
Yes.
But do you still consider yourself British?
Yeah.
Okay. And what do we like in Britain? We don't want to be happy and content. We like a good moan. We like to look at the negative. If the glass is half full, we'll empty it. So what I'm saying is, in all seriousness, is it what this stereotype we have that everything in Denmark is bright and shiny and happy all the time? Is it that, or are there, what is the dark side
to Denmark?
The Scandinoir.
Yeah.
Come on.
I think that, so there is a lot that is good. And of course, everyone has individual challenges. And of course, it's not perfect, but on paper and statistically and looking back decades now, they are doing many things well and have a better deal. What I would say is that because it has this reputation as being one of the happiest countries in the world, if you're not feeling happy in Denmark, you kind of feel worse. They have this thing, the happiness paradox, because if you compare yourself to others, right? So if everyone else around you is having a lovely time and you're told you're in the happiest country and you're not feeling great, then you can feel a bit lower.
You've got nowhere to go, because if you're miserable in Britain, which most of us are all the time, you can be like, well, I could always move to Denmark. Yeah, yeah. But if you're in Denmark, I'd never thought of that.
See?
Very depressing.
Poor Maria.
I'm sorry now for her and her glorious life.
So, and the taxes are high, obviously.
Yeah, so because before you wrote How to Raise a Viking, you did two books called The Atlas of Happiness and How to Be Sad. So that kind of encapsulates the sort of, this divided sort of
You know, the extremes. You've got that sort of real dark, like the weather, you know. You've got like endless summer or endless darkness.
Yes. Yeah, in Iceland, it's got the 24-hour sunlight in the summer. I mean, that sends you a bit cuckoo as well.
Mm.
But yeah, so The Year of Living Danishly, it's my first book. You never know how things are going to go. I was busy. I've just had a baby. I was busy like cleaning up sick and mine, the child, everything. And it was published in 21 countries around the world, which is obviously amazing. But it didn't quite sort of sink in because I was just too busy just cleaning up wee and poo.
Yeah.
So then I started hearing from readers in all of these different countries saying, oh, here's what they do in my country to be happy, and here's what works for us, and here's what the culture is predisposed towards where I am. So then I started pulling all of these ideas together, these kind of unique happiness concepts from different cultures. Just as you say, Ellie, like, you don't want to feel like, oh, we all have to move to Denmark and that's the only way to be happy. Like, there are different ways to be happy depending on where you are. Mm. So I collected all these together and that became the Atlas of Happiness. And then pre-COVID, when we were all travelling around a lot, you know, talking, meeting, and I was talking about the Atlas of Happiness, then people kept putting their hands up in the audience and at talks I was giving and things and saying, oh, I've just been made redundant and I'm about to be kicked out of my flat. How can I be happy? This idea that the expectation that we should be happy all the time, even when really tough things happen to us. So that kind of got me thinking about this idea of how to be sad and how we can't always be happy, and we have to allow ourselves to feel, you know, the dark sides as well.
Yeah, because what I thought was great about your How to Be Sad book was that, you know, we are kind of a bit miserable. We sort of revel in our misery in the UK, but we're not particularly good at being sad. We're the great avoiders. We're like the sweeper under the carpeters. It's fine. Yeah. You know, that we're sort of morose, but we're not really going into the sad.
Yes, the stiff upper lip and all of that. And I think we're conditioned from birth. I mean, many of us were told, you know, oh, don't cry, or if you fall over, like, it's okay, you're all right, up again. And we're kind of told that if we're not happy, then we're doing something wrong, that it's not, it's all placed on the individual. But, you know, you can't meditate your way out of a 40-hour working week with no childcare. The idea that it's all on the individual, I felt, was really problematic. And the idea that if we're not happy, we just haven't manifested hard enough, felt really problematic as well. So I kind of wanted to explore, you know, what that was about, why we were like that, and also how sadness is normal. It's inevitable. If we avoid sadness, we're just avoiding living. And actually, there's some really good things about being sad. Weirdly, counterintuitively, it can help us to be happier. It sounds mad, but the studies show it, and thanks.
Yes. I got a lot from it in terms of, like, you know, like the sitting in the sad, but also in your book, you talk about how to get out of the sadness in all the different ways. Obviously, nature being a big thing in Denmark, you basically from the get-go throw your babies outside.
Just throw them outside in a pram. But yes, so Danes think it's really good for babies' lungs, and in Finland, in most of the Nordic countries, to nap outside up to -20. Like, Wim Hof has nothing on Viking babies. They're just out there, and they believe it's really good for their lungs, helps them sleep better. There's not much evidence from outside the Nordic countries that either of those things are true, but it kind of works. And spending a lot of time outside in all weathers, which we know is good for our mental and physical health, and they dress them in all these outdoor snowsuits and balaclavas and all of this stuff so they can just be outside no matter what, which is quite different to how we do it here when you just pop a pair of cath kids and wellies on a child and just send them out and then wonder why they're miserable.
Yeah, and cold and wet. And then they come in 2 minutes later going, I have a screen.
Yeah, I don't like
Where are the crisps?
Yeah.
The Vikings, though, right?
Yeah.
I've completed Assassin's Creed Valhalla, so I basically am one anyway. Cool. They did quite a lot of bad things as well.
With their horn hats and they're chopping up and they're...
Well, there's still some axe throwing. There's still a lot of whittling. Marauding, but more in a sort of like hullabaloo running wild type way. Yeah, there's... That's still that kind of wanderlust.
Is there another kind of marauding? What do you mean? How many kinds of marauding are there? I thought there was only one type of marauding.
Yes, admittedly. But there is something... Of course, I am not advocating that people go full on Assassin's Creed.
Bring it back. Sorry. Bring back pillaging. But that's what I say.
There is something...
It's no fun.
There is something like uniting the Nordic countries of that kind of like rebellious spirit and that sort of... They're quite rule-abiding. They, you know, they pay their taxes, they do as they're told, but they're quite... They love freedom and quite anti-authoritarian and quite rough and tumble and happy to, run wild in nature. So they are quite tough in that way. So I felt like there was kind of some Viking spirit. And there's quite a lot of affection for this idea of Vikings, not the bad stuff these days, but yeah.
A lot of nudity. Can we bring up nudity just as a theme in Denmark? Because you do talk about having to, you know, people just go to the saunas with like their work colleagues and just have all the dangly bits out.
Well, that sounds like your worst nightmare.
Oh, I hate it.
You've been to a naked sauna with your work colleague. Me, she couldn't look me in the eye.
Really?
I had to get physiotherapy on my neck from looking at the ceiling. I've had it very confronting, Helen.
There is, you can avoid it should you really choose to. For example, winter bathing, like, which is basically dipping. It's not quite wild swimming. It's just getting in the cold sea for a second and then coming out again.
Oh, we've all done that.
There's a lot of dangly bits
around. She did it in Antarctica.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
Proper brave. He's Viking.
Yeah, I'm not doing it again.
Yeah. I've done it now. I got that point.
Completed it.
Yeah. But yeah, in all the changing rooms for swimming pools and things, you have to have a full nude scrub down in front of people before you go in because they want to use less chlorine.
What, like with a stick?
No, Helen, not with a stick. No, just like with your hands and some soap.
Oh, have you ever washed yourself?
Yes.
Well, then you're familiar with the genre, aren't you?
Okay, sorry, I use a flannel, but anyway.
They do, yeah, they don't have many flannels. So you're used to be seeing bodies of all different types, and you go into whichever sex you identify with from the age of like around 7 onwards. You see the dangly bits or any bits, and then there's often, so near me in the municipal public swimming pool, there's sometimes like a sauna off the changing rooms, so the single sex changing rooms, and there you can have a towel and you sit on the towel because you know naked bums on the wood. But there you see bits and bobs. Fair enough. But I've been in there.
It's the same at the David Lloyd, to be fair.
But I've been in there with like other school mums and like my mother-in-law, and you're just sort of sitting there going, I don't know what to do about this because I'm still British. But I do think it's good, and it's helped me, you know, working in women's magazines for years. It's helped me understand that type of body that I grew up seeing, and I think it's a lot better now, there's a lot more diversity, but that type of body I grew up seeing that I thought that's what we all had to aim for, no one's got that. Seeing a much more realistic range of bodies, not artfully posed, but just being how they are, with nice skin that puckers and dimples, and just made me much more accepting of my own. And so I'm really pleased my kids are growing up just seeing these are bodies, here they are, no shame attached, just... Mm.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because, you know, things like sexism and racism, they're so pervasive, it feels like, to me. So do they use it in the same way in Denmark?
Yeah, it's not perfect. And there's a weird problem issue about the number of female CEOs. So the balance is there, but because women get a lot of time off, parents get a lot of parental leave, that time out of the workplace can have an impact on anyone's career. Right. And if you're in the sort of slippery corporate world, I was thinking of a poll then, I don't know.
Okay, if you're an executive rap dancer.
World, that can have more
just
of an impact.
Too slippery.
Yeah, so actually the Nordic countries don't do brilliantly on female CEOs, apart from Sweden, where men have the most parental leave, there's the most paternity leave. So many feel like the answer is now, give more paternity leave. So
it feels a bit like there's like a competition between the Nordic countries to be like the most super woken. Like, well, we will give our men 16 years of parental leave. Well, we will ban all pornography.
No, they're fine with that.
Oh, Danish blue.
I think it's the first country to like legalise porn in Denmark. I've had to check that. But and racism, it's been a homogenous country until recently, so it's not as diverse as we're used to here. Mm-hmm. And I think my experience moving there as a white woman with blonde hair is very different to someone moving from another country. Yeah. So I absolutely appreciate like all of my privilege there, and I rewrote the ending to The Year of Living Danishly a couple of years back just to kind of incorporate these other experiences rather than just my experience moving there as someone who could pass for being Danish. Mm. And of course there are challenges there, but I wouldn't say it's any particularly, you know, not much worse than here or in the US or anything like that.
Yeah. Mm. So all this brilliant stuff, why aren't we all living in Denmark, or why haven't other countries in the world adopted these, so you're saying there's all these studies, there's all this evidence that shows this way of building society and treating people, and yes, high taxes, but this is the reward.
Yeah.
That's been proven over a period of decades now. Yeah. Why isn't the rest of the world sort of going, oh, let's do that then?
I think there's a real squeamishness in the UK and especially the US about paying more taxes. Often I will write for the newspapers that we might understand are less pro-high taxes, shall we say, and they'll say, well, how do we get that in the UK? And we have to pay a bit more tax. No, don't want that at all. Mm. So even though, you know, the books balance out in the end, there's a real reluctance. And also, interestingly, quick hobby horse moment, but attachment theory and John Bowlby, this idea that after the Second World War, when men were returning from war, needed to get back into jobs, and women who had taken up the slack and taken up all of those jobs during wartime, during which point the government had promoted putting kids into daycare and women going to work as a good thing, as being good for children. Then men coming back from war needed to go back to jobs. They commissioned this psychologist, John Bowlby, to do a study on the impact of children being separated from their mothers. But he did a study on children in orphanages who had been like the victims of war, essentially. And so he said, oh, they're having a terrible time. Ergo, being separated from your mother as a tiny child is a terrible idea. And this was really picked up in the UK and the US. And this idea of squeamishness around putting children into daycare, you still see, like, permeates culture in the UK and the US in a way that it just doesn't in the Nordic countries. They just have found it as a necessity post-war. They wanted more women in the workplace to increase the labour force. So they made daycare affordable, 75% subsidised by the state. And it's just been the norm.
How much does it cost to put a child in daycare?
So I will share that I paid about £350 a month.
Wow.
Jesus. Child.
And I just
was £1,200.
Yeah, I just spoke to a friend who's paying £2,000 a month for one child.
Yeah, wow. That was 10 years ago. I used to work 3 days a week and I cleared £50.
Oh my God, yeah.
And then for that much work.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if I don't go back to work, then I will...
Yeah, you're behind.
Then I'll be behind. And so I would, you know, get up at 6, take the kid to nursery, go to work, come back from work, pick up the kid from nursery, come back, cook the dinner... And then my husband would come home.
Yeah.
That was the worst bit of the day.
I know. So I was working for 15, 17 pounds a day.
God. And I presume as well from a lot of the mum friends I speak to that there is a big pressure on the idea that because you're away from your child for a very long time, whereas the daycare hours have dictated the way Danes, for example, work, so that office hours are 8 till 4, most kids go to daycare maybe 8 till 4, and then between 4 and 7 p.m. is sort of sacred family time. You might do more work later, but you're going to have that time. So I, you know, I will speak only for myself, and everyone has different choices to make, but I would have found it tough to drop my kid off at maybe 6 a.m. and, you know, not pick them up until 6 or 7 p.m. or whatever, a few days a week. But because it's this shorter day, and albeit every day, and I know a lot of people aren't comfortable with that, it just kind of felt okay to me.
Mm.
Yeah, it's so tough, and I would not tell anyone how to parent ever, but it's it feels like the Danish way, the kids seem to thrive in it, and the parents get to have a life and a career.
Yeah.
That's a wild idea.
What happens in that 4 to 7 hour, because not nice, we're recording this, it's now, it's like Wednesday, it's like 5 o'clock, and both my sons are upstairs on screens so that we can do this podcast.
Thank you.
Without dealing with their bullshit.
Mummy's got to work.
And I'm not going to lie, most days they spend at least some of the period between 4 and 7 on screens. And yet we also have dinner in that time, and maybe they do some homework, just really depends. But now in Denmark, is that special golden? Are we all sitting, are we playing like Monopoly and just doing some craft?
Yes.
Yeah. Make each other pasta necklaces.
Hessian shoes.
Yes. Crafting. Reading from the Bible.
Yeah. My daughter has been nicknamed Craft Vader because she does craft very intensely, and she got cut off from glue gun use. But no, absolutely not. And there is a bit of a digital blind spot in Denmark, I would say, that that because there is this social codex to give Danes freedom above all other things, so that actually they've applied the same thing to screens. And the average age, I think, for British kids to get a phone, according to Ofcom, is about 11. In Denmark, it's 9. So they are not any sort of... It's quite an Enid Blyton childhood, But then there's this blind spot when it comes to screens. So they are absolutely watching telly and on screens and doing gaming and stuff. But I would say that they do tend to, because both parents are finishing work, that both parents and everyone is sitting around the table eating a meal or however, you know, whatever that family formation may be. So it's not perfect, but there is a time within those hours where everyone is sitting together and eating something. They've probably had time to cook themselves. So that's a nice thing.
All on their trip-trap chairs.
On their trip-trap chairs, yes.
All of them. Everyone's on a trip-trap chair.
Everyone's,
them,
oh my God.
Just a huge platter of bacon is just placed on the table.
Yeah. But there's loads of, you know, the health benefits of eating together, and it's meant to be sort of good for well-being to eat with your family chosen or blood family. So I think there's a lot of positives in that. And yeah, the trip-trap chair, for anyone who doesn't know, it's this Norwegian industrial designer decided that children, instead of being strapped into a chair, like many of us got those IKEA ones where you strapped children, should be able to climb up.
The plastic buckets.
Yes, should be able to climb up themselves, should be at eye level at the table with other people, so then you feel part of the family team. It's this equality again. And they're so popular that most Danish homes will have one. You'll sort of beg, borrow, or steal. We have like 3 hand-me-down ones, or that you get them in charity shops. And so lots of people go for that because they feel like the child should be treated as an equal. There's this real, you must respect everyone just because they exist, not respect your elders, not anything like that, but just so that the children are part of the family unit.
Well, good for them.
Strap them down. £12
that IKEA high chair was. We had about 4. Brilliant. It was like the closest thing we have come to socialism in this country. You just leave it out the front of your house when the kids got to someone would take it. I think I got one. I think we needed one for a guest, and I got one off Facebook. Oh, happy days. No, I don't know. Maybe Danish children just better behave. That would have worked with one of my children. Mm. The other one, you had to strap him down.
Just gaffer tape him down. Yeah.
What I would do is glue his trousers to the chair.
Much better.
Eating trousers. Yeah.
Or just put him in wellies so enormous that he couldn't put his feet through the little holes. That's the only way. No, good for them.
They have a lot of freedom.
And they do gritted tea. Yeah.
Just thinking about all the letters we're going to get, Helen.
Fuck off!
Fucking Danes.
The weather's terrible. So again.
I remember you said your son, was he given a knife or something at 4 or something?
Yeah.
Like a stabby knife?
Oh, my goodness. So they all went to this terrifying institution called Family Scouts. And they're taught to like whittle, chop down wood with axes, start fires, and at one point I was holding a stick in each hand because I have twins, whilst each twin was supposed to be whittling to make kindling for the fire.
Was it the sticks you just used to scrub yourself down with?
Yes. The ones Helen had used.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was holding these wet sticks for Helen, and my children were like whittling in one direction, and they both just changed direction. And so one cut into my hand on one side and the other cut in on the other side. As I'm like, fuck, daddy's taking you next time. I found myself saying, now famous family catchphrase, you can have a saw once you're 4 2-year-olds.
But you can have a gun when you're 1.
My eldest came home with a brochure from the Scouts, like, what kind of knife is best for you? Fixed blade, pen knife, flick knife.
Wow.
And you just have your dagger. Or I got an email saying, on Wednesday we build bonfires, bring daggers.
Wow.
Because you have it on your Scout.
So is there not knife crime?
I want to sort of touch some wood. Violent crime is fairly low, and of course there will be exceptions, and of course bad things still happen, as everywhere. But there is more of an acceptance. You have to know how to survive in nature. So that's the mindset that they're coming.
Why do you have to know how to survive in nature?
Because Vikings had to historically to survive, and the weather can be so horrible.
Yeah, but
I guess the idea is if you get stuck somewhere. There's no.
Vikings didn't have Kendall mint cake and like the internet. Like, it's fine.
Oh, we don't have Kendall. We don't have hula hoops. Honestly, yes.
What?
Oh, fuck this shit. I'm never going there.
You see, the weather, no hula hoops.
Mama?
Plenty of reasons. Not really. No.
What's going on with the royal family? Wasn't there some recent royal family?
There's an Australian in charge.
We've got an Australian now. Yes.
Yes.
Have you got an Australian queen?
It's tradition to marry someone who isn't Danish because they recognise they're a small country. It's a bit insular, right. So they think, well, we need like new ideas. Marry someone from
Tasmania.
Don't marry your mum. Look how Hamlet worked out. That went very badly wrong.
Don't marry your mum. If I could offer you one tip, don't marry your mum.
Yeah. So how old's your oldest? How old's little Red?
So he's 9 now. So when I wrote the book, books take ages. So when I wrote the book, the twins were 5 and the eldest was 8. And now we've got 6-year-old twins and a 9-year-old boy.
And so you're heading into the teen sphere in Denmark.
Yes.
So all those freedoms.
Yes.
That nudity, Helen.
And the nudity. Oh, my goodness. Well, so, yeah, this was... So I had to really dial up the research because, obviously, I only have children up to the age of 9. So then to really kind of... It was a lot of interviewing and a lot of, like, speaking to parents and psychologists and teachers about the teenage years and what's in store. And it's, again, this massive freedom and a very liberal, permissive attitude when it comes to things like curfews and alcohol. You're allowed to buy alcohol... until up to 6.5% age 16.
And you can get a very strong continental lager for 16.
It used to be 16%. They only just changed the law, like,
so
in December.
So you could get a couple of bottles of wine.
Yeah.
Even is 16%?
That's like very strong.
Like a port or a cherry?
Yes, yeah. It's a port.
It's
a port.
Wine.
Yes.
Having some Stilton.
It's very liberal and there's a lot of freedom, but because there's this emphasis on that everyone is equal, like, you call your teachers by their first name, no uniforms, no homework till around the age of 11, this the idea of, like, equality and respect, there's less of an idea of teenagers being a total nightmare as I hear from friends in the UK. And of course there are exceptions and of course, yeah, but I think there's this idea that there's not that much to rebel against, I guess, because you have all this freedom anyway.
Yeah.
And also, you've got stuff to look forward to. You don't. It's coming back to the crime thing. You've got a future that you can visualise, and maybe you've got, you don't need
to numb yourself at university.
Or, kick back at something because everyone's like, we're going to pay you to be a student. What are you fucking moaning about?
Like the olden days,
And do you still get paid to go, like, do a year abroad when you're at university? Things like that. Like, there's some good perks.
Yeah, good perks. Yeah, you get. You get student grants. They also have this great thing for between age 14 and 16 called EFTA school, which is this residential boarding school, again quite subsidised by the state, that you go to for 1 year, and it's like adult life with training wheels. So you learn how to do your own laundry, how to do cooking, how to clean. So by 16 you'd know these things. And I once knew a 36-year-old who couldn't use a washing machine. So this just seems like a good idea, and a quarter of all Danish teenagers go, so it's not everyone, but it's a big chunk of teenagers are kind of getting that almost university experience but quite young.
In the market for investment worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But I do love that about Denmark. It's like, it's really healthy. You know, you've got your brown bread and your...
Until it's not healthy.
Yeah. Fish. And then it's like really unhealthy. And then
there's jam for breakfast.
Isn't it?
It's now, the sausage situation.
The holding sausage.
Yeah, the holding
sausage. What's the holding
sausage? Tell us about the holding sausage.
There's this real... Yeah, I think often, you know, people who think, oh, the Nordics, everything's so lovely, they must eat really healthily and rye bread and herring. Yeah, sure. But they also have a phrase for... I mean, they have a phrase for tooth butter when you slather on Lurpak. So
I love this.
You see your teeth marks in it.
Oh, what is the word?
Tennis more.
Tennis more. I always forget that. Yeah. I read that somewhere. That yeah, there's a word because that's tooth how butter. I always want my.
And that's how you want it. Yeah,
on a hot cross bun.
Or on like saurine. Dorian's having a saurine. Saurine.
Yeah. So I always, if my husband or my son are making me like toast, I always go, I want it. Oh, like the Danes of it, you know, what's that word?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so there's
tooth
that.
Butter.
Yeah. And then there's also, all of the Nordic countries are obsessed with sausages. Obsessed. But not like a lovely waitress one, but proper, like, wiener Frankfurter type ones.
Smooth. Velvety smooth.
Yeah, they have wagons of them on many street corners. And in Norway and Denmark, they have something called a ventepølse, or a waiting sausage, that you have in the queue while you wait for your main event sausage to cook.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I just think they're so good.
Oh.
There's a thing in America called walking bacon.
Oh.
So when you go to a... go to a sandwich bar and they'll say, do you want a sandwich and do you want some walking bacon? Which is that they'll give you a couple of bits of bacon wrapped in a tissue that you can eat while you're holding a sandwich to go back to eat it. Some walking bacon.
In case you can't last.
Yes, exactly.
I'm surprised Danes haven't really sort of owned that as well.
Mm. Now, speaking of the theme of sausage, can we talk about Danish sperm? Because I'm fascinated by it. It's the top one.
Is it the most
sort of
very popular? Denmark, as well as like Lego, beer, bacon, they have sperm as a major export. So they send their sperm to 100 countries worldwide, and the Danish sperm accounts for 30% of all new imported sperm in the UK. So they call it the gentle Viking invasion.
Wow.
Because they just make it so much easier.
They're doing it via post instead of pillaging.
Yes,
they've actually built a tunnel. It's like a pipe. All the men, they go and they do it in the pipe, and then it just zoops all the way.
What a lovely image, Ellie. Lovely.
Spunk pipe. You know in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the chocolate river?
Yes.
It's like that.
Straight into the Thames.
Don't fall in, you'll end up like Augustus Gloop.
Oh, very
pregnant.
Impregnated.
Come with me.
Ejaculation.
Lovely
of
work.
Insemination.
Oh,
it's
you
like
guys,
a musical,
this is why you get paid the big money. Oh, this is beautiful. Yes, so it's big, it's huge, and they make it quite easy to do it. And there's not like a stigma. So I spoke to lots of donors, and they all said, well, we don't snigger about it. It's perfectly normal. There are 37 different types of family unit in Denmark. So there's no stigma attached to like being a donor mum, or having two mums, or having just like being raised by a single dad. It's quite normal for these different family formations. So yeah, many Danes feel like, well, why shouldn't you be able to have children if you can afford to and you're going to love them, then yeah, of course, we'll help those who need it.
Yeah, we'll go down the spunk factory and see Willy Wanker.
Yay! 11 out of 10, Ellie!
Thanks, mate.
But you were saying that there's like VR headsets in the wank rooms. Yeah. I mean, it is next level. They're really
there. Yeah. Pornography in.
Yeah.
Apparently,
fuck off.
It improves the quality of the ejaculate.
VR, you're
hang on, hang the fuck on.
Science says
what
so.
What are we
VR.
Saying? Who fucking said? First of all, what? Let me guess. The
which
gender
scientists?
Of the scientists that discovered that watching pornography makes your spunk jazzier?
Virtual reality, though, like proper. This is.
But when you say virtual reality, so what
is it like a headset?
Yeah,
like
you're
in
yeah,
the
no, I know what virtual reality is. I'm a professional video game.
Sorry, I'm just.
We're analog.
Woman explained. Woman explained.
You're on a TV, but in your head. No, I know what it is. I've got one. There's one there.
I'm so embarrassed.
I'm so embarrassed. Looking at one.
Oh,
why have
I'm
I
so
done
sorry.
That?
Oh, anyway, but no, please, woman explain to me. Why is the sky blue? Why? So what are they? What are you actually in the VR? There's like a virtual woman that you can fiddle about with. What is it?
I didn't.
What's the POV?
Well, the thing is, because VR, the whole point of VR, right, is that you, because I don't know if you know what VR is. I didn't until about a minute ago. But that you have the experience that you can't. So like, if you look like you're on a roller coaster, it looks like you're going up and down, obviously. So are you looking? But do you have an attachment perhaps around your peen that squeezes it? So when you go in the ladies,
I think it's very much neck upwards, and you're in charge of your bottom half.
Oh,
I see. Yes.
As far as I understand,
so you
and I, you know, I toured around the rooms, but I didn't. I got to know these donors, but I didn't get to know them whilst they were donating.
I cannot believe you didn't ask for a go on the VR sex doll thing. Sorry. I would have 100% been like, let's in get involved. Let's have a go.
Like,
I want to know, like, do you chat to the VR lady? Like, oh, hello, how are you? I'm fine, thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I live in Denmark, so I'm obviously very happy. Me too. Is it like that? I really must know more.
I'll find it. You know, I'm going to find out for you and I'm going to email you.
Thank you.
Please do.
I'm going to ask.
And did you say there's like an IKEA catalogue? There's an Argos catalogue, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can find out. I don't know why I'm miming flicking through a catalogue. It's online. I don't know why I'm doing that. But yeah, you can sort of look, search for, like, you know, what eye colour, curve of the nose. You can look at baby pictures. You can look at their handwriting samples. You can find out their likes, dislikes. Like, Gunter loves Frisbee. A lot of badminton players. Honestly. Oh,
good on the wrist.
Yeah. So there's a... I think there's some of them were really, really beige flag, really bland. There was one guy like Marius, who just like, Marius enjoys most things. It's like, pick a lane, Marius.
Marius is a fucking serial killer. That's what Marius is.
Yikes.
You don't have likes and dislikes. It's because you're frightened to tell everyone that you like human skin. That's probably a bit of speculation there somewhere.
Sorry.
But, oh my gosh! I'm still thinking about this VR.
It is.
Okay, I'm going to find out.
But it improves the quality of the jet.
Yes. So they because I've done fertility treatment, I've done IVF and use my husband's, just to be clear. I didn't use Marius. But so you need a different quality of sperm if you're doing IVF or if you're doing IUI. Yes.
Turkey baster versus science-y,
exactly.
You know,
yes.
What's or not.
Although not actual turkey baster, but like science turkey baster.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if you're super injecting sucker. It right yeah. into the egg, you can have fewer... a lower motility on your sperm, mm-hmm. And you just need a few good men to get through there. You decide what kind of donor you want, and then you can see how strong their sperm is, and you can make your decision. And
very detailed,
really detailed. You see baby pictures. You can pay to see adult pictures, but they put that behind a paywall so that their friends don't have a little look. And
yes,
see
fair
what's
enough.
Going on.
Yeah. And there's a limit to how many each. Man
yes.
can father, is that right? So
yes.
there's not just one dad
because, to rule them all.
Yes, because then you may not, in years to come, you might be a brother and sister.
You might be in a sauna, like looking at someone naked and going, wait a minute.
Hang on.
You look very similar.
Yes.
Yes, but this varies from country to country. So in some countries, you know, 10, in other countries, 8. In the US, you know, they haven't quite got the same legislation. It's in depending on states. But yeah, they have to be quite careful because it's all quite new. They're still figuring all this out. But also because the Nordic countries are small. In Iceland, they have to have a special app because it's such a small population. You're supposed to bump this app before you bump in bed to check that you're not related to someone because it's such a homogenous.
Are you my cousin?
That is some sexy
foreplay, right?
Wow.
Like, do you come here often? Are you my cousin?
Yeah. Wow.
This is your chat. So yeah, they're quite aware of all of this stuff. They're quite that's quite practical minded. They, you know, that's not sort of rose tinted glasses. They're let's get on with this and no shame, but let's check we're not related.
Interesting. So I had a friend who lived in Copenhagen for a while, and she was single, and she did like the dating apps. And one of the things that she said with the Danish men, really lovely, really well dressed, lovely, but they had no game. Like she said, you know, in terms of I don't know, what's the word? The grunt, the animalistic, the sort of, they were all very polite and, you know, well, basically saying they're not as good in bed.
They weren't arseholes, basically.
There wasn't that, because, you know, when you think of Viking, you think of this sort of machismo and the sort of...
Right.
But then it didn't translate...
In the bedroom.
Yes.
Interestingly, all of the Nordic countries, there are metrics that you can measure different cultures by, whether they are, there's a big power imbalance, for example, or whether they're more feminine culture or masculine culture, whether or not we like these definitions. Mm. And all of the Nordic countries are ranked by this Dutch sociologist as quite feminine cultures, which means, and again, I'm not mad about the definitions, but they're more caring, more collaborative, more community-minded. And all of the Nordic countries rate really highly on this. So... I think, again, it's this idea of equality, this idea of that you respect people just because And yeah, this idea of community mindedness is really fostered from a young age, and that you collaborate and that you work together. So I wonder, it's interesting, isn't it? And of course, it's down to personal preference, but I wonder whether how much of the rom-coms we were reared on and the madness of some of them has this kind of some more toxic elements of masculinity that we've grown up to think, for that's what I gotta have.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's not gonna be the best thing in future, who knows?
Yeah, but, yeah, that's really true.
Now, did she meet someone she liked?
No, she's left Denmark now. Left
I tried those men, no good.
She's gone somewhere where the men are awful and beat you.
My God, well look, there we have it, everyone. Denmark, trampolines in the streets. Men spunking into enormous rivers of jism that then is sent out on an enormous network of streams around the globe to create an army of more beautiful, less sexually aggressive people. What a world we live in. Thank you so much for taking us on a journey today,
it's
Helen.
Been quite a journey. It's quite a ride.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
I've had a lovely time with you, Helen.
I've had the best time. Or are you talking? Which Helen are you talking to?
Doesn't matter.
We had a lovely time.
I had a lovely time. We love Denmark. We are very happy.
What is your book called, Helen R?
It's How to Raise a Viking.
And it's available now.
It's available now, yes.
Oh, there you go.
Highly recommend the audiobook as well.
I highly recommend Assassin's Creed Valhalla, although it does put more of an emphasis on hacking people's heads off. But a lovely time nonetheless. Oh, well, there we go.
Thanks,
Have you got anything else you want to plug, Helen? Where can people follow you?
I am doing a few of the literary festivals this year. I'm at Ms. Helen Russell on the socials. How to Raise a Viking. I'd love to hear what people think.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
Should we do some admin?
Should we do Scummy Mummy Confessions, Ellie?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. We've been doing the podcast
11 years.
I forgot that we always have a thing that we always do at the end of the podcast.
That's okay.
That has been the format for the past 276 episodes, I feel like we should continue it.
Go on.
Or at least not have that discussion live on the podcast. Yes. Have you a confession, Helen Thorne?
I do have a confession. So I was recently in Australia visiting family, and I came back last Tuesday, and we were all very tired, and my partner was there to greet us, came home, and we all went to bed very early, and it was all going very well. It was lovely reunion and everything. We had a lovely dinner, and it got to 2 a.m. and he woke me up and he went, Helen, I'm sorry, but the smell is so bad. Oh. I can't breathe.
Oh.
And what had happened is he'd been looking after the house and the cats for 2.5 weeks. And that night, the cats decided to piss, or I don't know which of the cats, on his side of the bed.
Was it on the duvet or on the
duvet? Oh. On the duvet. So on top of the bed. It was still damp.
Oh.
And it smelled so bad. And I don't know why the cats, he had been like, cat dad for 2.5 weeks.
Were they angry that you were back because they had to share him?
They had to share this marvellous Spanish man, and now I was.
With his hat on.
I know, exactly. And he's in very gentle hands. So that was 2 a.m. What I had to do. Anyway, so my poor partner, he wrapped himself up in my fluffy dressing gown. I had a very thin summer like thing. And then, and he works in a hospital, so he needs his sleep. And then I think it was 4 or 5 a.m. my son opened the door and turned the light on and said, I've been awake for 2 hours. It's breakfast time. So we were like, And then 6 a.m. My daughter woke up and had a very loud shower and banged about. And but the cats haven't pissed on the bed since. So that's great
good
news. Helen, any piss related confessions?
You know, I think last time I saw you guys, my children were much smaller. So there was a lot more wee and poo going on. But we got given some Easter things for the kids already and have already gone into their chocolate supplies. So sorry about that. They'll be getting slightly less. I got mad and chucked a bubble machine out the window recently. That was not my finest hour.
Sometimes you do have to throw something out the window.
Sometimes you just have to throw.
We're not here to
and
judge.
No one was putting their shoes on. But yeah, that's stealing their Easter chocolates. It's not my finest moment.
We've all had to do it. I've had to eat, you know, Haribo out of a child's, you know, lucky bag. And
I was going
to
say mouth. Sugar.
Yeah.
Oh my god. So my confession is, so as you know, Helen T, one of my sons goes to these little classes now on a Wednesday for help with his handwriting, which he finds a bit tricky sometimes. So we go to like this special session. There's other kids there, and they have to do these handwriting exercises. And one of the exercises, they're like, okay, kids, now we're going to show you an example of some handwriting where they haven't like maybe followed all the handwriting rules, right? So it's a bit, you know, and we're going to look at it and we're going to look at what rules maybe we could look at following. And everyone's like, oh, okay, yeah. And they give it to my son and he picks it up and he goes, Mother, this is absolute gibberish. I can't be expected to read this. It's on the table. I was like, I think we're supposed to do constructive criticism. I don't think you can call it gibberish.
I can't work under these conditions.
Absolute gibberish.
Lovely vocabulary, though. Well done.
Oh, he's got your vocabulary.
The vocabulary is exquisite.
If he wants to insult you, he's got all the
good
words.
Good one. Yeah, nice constructive insult.
Oh, well, now should we do the admin?
Yes, we shall. So, Helen, you're doing some lovely book festivals and tours that we can find that. And also, obviously, you've got other books available. Why not buy all six?
Buy all six and get yourself a lovely shelf of your library.
Yes, please do. Please do. We're on tour, Helen. We're going up and down the country. Very excited. We're doing some big shows in Stockport, aren't we, Ellie?
That's right.
We are going to Cornwall. Tickets have released for the Norwich shows, which has been very highly in demand. That's in November, so that's very far away.
This very week, we're going to Northampton and Sutton Coalfield.
Yes.
North London, Kent, Hempstead Park, Oxford.
Oxford, yes, please. Yes, lovely.
We've got a little Welsh tour in May as well. We're doing Swansea and Cardiff, Mansfield and Leicester. And then, all over the shop. Liverpool, Nottingham,
wonderful,
everywhere.
Wonderful places. Excellent. That covers it, doesn't it?
And that's got to be it. Are there any more permanent format points that I've forgotten?
No.
No, great.
No, I was going to say, Helen, so what's next? What's next for you?
I am writing a novel.
Ooh. Hello there.
Hello.
Woohoo.
Yes. So I'm immersing myself in some fun worlds and hearing all the people talk to me like some crazy lady, but it's really fun.
Oh,
really
wonderful.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Until next time,
bye-bye!
Marvellous.
Can't wait to see... Sorry, I'd burped at the same time. Great. Can't wait to see you there. Thank you for you to Ellie for editing out my burp.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Always need an outtake.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.